The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
The UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram, joins us every single week right here on the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio. Those three little letters are going to get you classic rock to the bone. I know he loves his classic rock. And, of course, 14 different unique programs, including the UAB Director's Chair. And, of course, so we take your emails, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can hear this show on every major industry out there when it comes to podcast, and certainly watch us right here on our YouTube channel. Mark, how you doing, brother? We are recording the show here on a Thursday. We have a huge game coming up against Memphis down at Bartow Arena against they're cusping right there, the top 10 teams. So we got that to talk about. But how you doing, brother? Everything good?
Yeah, I'm excellent, Tony. How you been?
Fantastic. Doing great. Saw an interesting article here through Business Insider about what college sports actually make. Now, This kind of reminds me of what a strength of schedule is. No one really knows what a strength of schedule means. Is the strength of schedule when you're playing that team? Is the strength of schedule mean what the team is by the end of the year? Were they number three when you played them, but they're number 21 at the end? Does it mean what their strength of schedule, you know, who they played? Does it? You look at 10 different strength of schedules, and you're going to get 10 different answers, right? So if you ask the question, how many teams in college football or college sports period are making money, you're probably going to get 10 different answers because there's 10 different ways to cut that pie up. According to Business Insider, of the 1,062 colleges and universities that field varsity athletic teams under the banner of the NCAA, only 396, fewer than half, made at least $10 million off their sports teams in 2022. Only about 56, about 5%, made at least $100 million. And then they went through the list of all the teams that obviously went from the highest to the lowest. Ohio State, number one. Texas, number two. Of course, they'll be going to the SEC. Georgia, number three. Alabama, four. Michigan, five. Notre Dame, six. Oklahoma, seven. And LSU, number eight. I'll just go through and you can go check out the article. So I see this article as a football fan, and I have heard that, you know, when all the money's made, and this is just based off of women's and men's basketball and football programs, okay? It doesn't talk about all the other Title IX sports that a university's part of. When they're saying they're making money, what does that mean? Are you in the black? Does that mean at the end of the year you've got $10 million you're sitting on? What exactly does that mean when you say university is making money off of college sports?
Well, very few really do. There's a difference between revenue and profit. So not having seen the article, I'm not sure what they're referring to. But look, we generate revenue. We probably generate, you know, we're somewhere in the $10 million range right there and what we generate in complete revenue. But our budget is, you know, $35, $38 million. So, you know, if it weren't for the institutional support that we get, we couldn't come close to operating like at all. And so, it is funny to me how writers or some of the talking heads talk about all this money that's out there. Look, man, we generate revenue. We do not generate a profit, not in anything. And so, like I said, if it wasn't for the institution, we couldn't do it. And there's probably only 20 schools in the country who operate without institutional help. So almost all of us are getting some financial help from the university. There's direct financial help, and then there's indirect. You know, what would that be? Well, that would be like maybe the university facilities team. They have a team of people that mow the grass around the university. Maybe they also mow the grass at the baseball field, the football field, or the soccer field. So that's indirect support, meaning they're taking something off of your books rather than providing cash that you spend however you spend it. It's support to you that you don't have to spend money on. Yeah. You got to do it. You got to mow the grass. Mm-hmm. But they're handling that. So things like that. It could be utilities. Maybe some schools have a centralized utility system where there's a budget for the university to pay all utilities so that you, the athletic department, don't have to pay for your utilities. It's a wide variety of things that it could be. But almost all of us are getting something like that. And I would bet you even those 20 that I mentioned that operate without institutional support, I bet they get indirect support. Mm. So this is harder to do. There's a lot of money out there. We spend every bit of it.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because when you look at an average business model, if you're in the red long enough, you go under. You have to close your doors. But there are so many businesses, and I think of Uber as one of those. Uber lost $9.5 billion last year. Lost $9.5 billion. Yet there's so many people pouring money into Uber, and obviously everyone's using it. And so there's so many pieces attached to that. It's its own monster, right? And it's worth billions and billions of dollars, yet it's losing money on an average basis. So how do you figure out, from a budget standpoint, as an athletic director at UAB, how much willing you're going past what your revenue is? If you're bringing in $10 million and you're like, okay, how much further can you go above that $10 million before it starts to pinch?
Yeah, well, we're always tight, Tony, but very hard to at least stay within our budget. And you know, within the budget doesn't mean we're a million in budget. We might be, you know, $30,000 in budget. But we, other than our transitional time out of Conference USA, we've been in budget every year, which I'm proud to say in my time here, which I understand to be maybe the only time in our history to be in budget. It's just, you can't go to the grocery store with $100 and spend $110. You know, that's, it's that simple. So we try to manage things here the same way that you have to manage things in your house. We try not to live on credit, meaning I try not to take any loans if I don't have to, but you know, facilities projects, you have to. So, you know, we're always, you know, trying to find creative ways to generate revenue. Anything that we can do to generate another $20,000 a year, we'll take it. You know, so we don't look at anything that you might think is small in the grand scheme of $38 million. $20,000 doesn't sound like a lot, but at the end of the year, you're going to find out that $20,000 was needed.
When you look at the type of money that the colleges are spending, certainly around their football programs, and we see these kids go into these, there's waterfalls, there's game rooms. I mean, it's outrageous. It's unbelievable. As a father who has children who are trying to teach his children about how to budget themselves so they can actually have a nice home and have some extra money for vacations and stuff, would you say that the majority of colleges run their programs pretty effectively, or are they living like the average American where they're high on credit?
Probably a lot of high on credit. Facilities, you know, we have so many of our student athletes who will come through and they may not say this directly, but if our staff has been to their home when they recruited them or they know enough about them, in most cases, they live better with us than they did at home. Many cases. Their life here at UAB is better than what they grew up with. Their housing is better. They eat better. They're in a safer environment, potentially, just a number of things. And they're around other driven people. Now, I'm not just talking about the athletes. They're around other students who are driven to be successful, driven to have a college degree. And so if you were a person that never thought you could graduate from college, but now you're in an environment with everyone else who don't see that as an option, failure's not an option, I'm going to graduate, they take on that same sort of personality and mindset. And then, you know, they get a college degree and they got a real chance to go and be successful in life. And we provide a lot of things that we don't get credit for, whether it's, like I said, health, safety, nutrition, you know, core strength training, but medical care. Just think about a trainer every day at practice. It's just checking on them. Yeah. Tony, are you feeling okay? Yeah, good. I'm feeling good. You sound like you got a cold. You got a cold? I mean, like they're playing like their mom, you know, they're playing parent. But hey, why don't you feel like you're a little stuffy? Why don't you? I got something for you. Why don't you take this? And, you know, maybe that'll clear that up so you feel better. Like there's a lot of that we get zero credit for that's happening. And not just at UAB, at everybody's campus.
He's the UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram. He joins us every single week. We're very gracious and grateful to have him on every single week here on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast. And, of course, you can watch it right here on our YouTube channel. Jessica, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Jessica in Southside, and obviously we get a lot of emails from Southside, as we should, wants to know, what makes a leader? It's really interesting because normally when you see a basketball, football team, And you got your players, you got your good utility guys, maybe you got your leading scores, you know, you're competitive every single night. And for some reason, the team just doesn't seem to gel. We always want to sit there and say, well, they don't have any leadership. They need leadership. And I've seen it happen, you know, where you see, you'll take like one or two guys away and all of a sudden the chemistry of a particular team changes. And maybe that's because they're taking away those leaders. Sometimes they're upperclassmen. Is it the leading scorer? Is he supposed to be the leader? Is it the upperclassman or the senior? Is he supposed to be the leader? She wants to know what makes a good leader.
Well, on a sports team, it's a lead by example person. So they're not skipping class. They're going to class like they're supposed to. They're always early, if you know, not just on time, but early to practice and early to film. They're doing extra. Right. They're leading by example by if let's just take basketball, for example, they're in their spare time. They're working on their game. They're not practicing with anybody else. They're just shooting the basketball. They're taking free throws. They're working on their ball handling, whatever it might be that they can do to be better. And that is leadership, meaning I am leading by example by showing these other players, if you want to be as good as me, then this is what you do, or you see, I'm not good enough. And you see me trying to get better. I'm trying to get better. If you would try to get better, we'd all get better. It's hard sometimes for your freshmen to demonstrate great leadership because they don't think it's their place yet. Mm-hmm. A lot of times freshmen will show up and they think that's for the older guy to do. I'm just trying to fit in. I'm just trying to, you know, not get, you know, picked on, or I'm just trying to stay in school. I'm just trying to keep up, you know? So a lot of times it's hard for a freshman. I had a teammate, Jonathan Brown, who showed a lot of great leadership qualities as a freshman. And what he did was he just brought energy every day. So when he came to practice, he was just kind of bouncing around almost like music was playing. And he was like, you know, like a hype man kind of, not crazy, but just, you know, kind of bouncing around and being himself, really, but he was positive. He was just positive. And the coaches loved it. And they were like, man, look at that. You know, because it's not common for a freshman to step in and do that. And he did that. And he was a good player. And so that'd be another thing is it's hard to be a great leader if you're not also, you don't have to be the best player on the team, but you got to play, right? So you may work on your game a ton. You may be early to everything. You may go to class, but if you sit at the end of the bench, it's hard for that player, which is not their fault. It's hard for the starters to listen to that guy, right? But you don't have to start, but you got to play, you know, a fair amount of ball. You got to get in the game with some regularity for your best players to maybe take on your qualities. Those qualities, like I said, you know, always doing the right thing, always doing extra and trying to be better, watching film on your own to see what did I do wrong? And now what's our opponent do that I could try to exploit and help us win? Because you're only allowed to have so many hours with the coaches. You're only allowed by rule to practice so much and to watch so much film. So you got to have players that are willing to do things on their own to be really great, yeah. Not just participate, but to really be great and win.
Certainly, leading by example is a big part of that. And I think, and you're obviously a leader. I think I was a leader at our radio station. We had 14, 15 people underneath and people knew. They'd actually come to me and say, listen, we're going to change something. We're going to change their moniker or our mascot or whatever. We really need you to get behind this because people are going to be looking at you to see how you react to this new thing we're going to be doing. And I'd say, sure. But I also think it's interesting. What's your take on whiners? There seems to be a lot of whiners in sports. I think of LeBron James first as you look off a little bit. Whiners can be leaders too, but there are some whiners.
There's positives and there are negative leaders.
All right, talk about that. Yeah,
you hear people say, "Oh, they got a locker room problem."
Yeah.
Well, the locker room problem is you have a good player who starts whining and gets real negative about things. And now they're dragging everybody with them. They're dragging everybody down. You can drag people up or you can drag them down. And there's negative leaders too. And the negative leader is it's me talking you out of going to class. Come on, Tony, man, I don't go to that class. I'm tired. Come on, man, let's not go. Let's stay here and do this. Let's just go get something to eat, man. Let's not man, I don't listen to that boring teacher talk. You know, that's a negative leader. You are dressed and ready, backpack on your shoulder, ready to walk out the door, and I drag you down with me to go lunch, you know, instead of getting lunch after. And so whining, I have no place for. I usually think that a whiner is an overly entitled person. Look, I think a lot of LeBron James in terms of his ability to play, but he's been so good for so long. I'm not saying he doesn't work hard, because I'm certain that he does. But, you know, he's just had a very uniquely different path than most everybody else in the world of pro sports.
No, I mean, obviously, it's interesting, because I don't think you can be super successful in a sport and not be a leader. And that goes for, you know, whether you're in general sales or whether it goes for being the CEO of a company or anything else. But there's also, in order to have leaders, you have to have followers. And I also think there's good followers. And I think there's some people, much like college coaches. I think there's a lot of college coaches out there that are great assistant coaches. I think they're super assistant coaches. They're just not great head coaches. They're just not. Yeah. And it's not to say they can't lead one thing and not lead another, but just talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure you've seen that. You just think that it's just going to, obviously, you're going to go up the pecking order to the point where you're going to be an assistant here. Next thing you're going to be here. Next thing you're going to be a head coach. And sometimes it just doesn't happen. And certainly we're seeing that a lot right now in head coaches, because the head coaching carousel is spinning right now.
Yeah, it's rare to find a head coach that wasn't an assistant at one point, mm-hmm. right? There are rare cases where you find a person who their very first job was head coach. You know, they were head coach at a high school. They did well, and then, you know, went to a different high school, and then they never were an assistant. They just were the head coach, and then maybe they get a college job as a head coach. That happens. Our current football and previous football coach are that. And my point is, most people start out as an assistant coach, and until they get their opportunity to be a head coach, you don't really know how they're going to do. You look at qualities and characteristics that you think that that they have that would make them a great head coach, but until they get that opportunity, they don't know, and you don't know. And so there's always risk when you hire a head coach. It doesn't matter what they've done in their past. Just because they were successful at a previous school doesn't mean they'll be successful here. I love to use the Nick Saban as an example. I mean, mm-hmm. this guy, incredible football coach. It didn't work out at Miami. He wasn't great at Miami. Is that the NFL? Is it Miami? Would he have been better at New England or Dallas? Or maybe, you know, Pete Carroll was not successful with the Jets, super successful at Southern Cal, super successful with the Seahawks. Okay, well, why? And is partly, probably Pete Carroll probably would say, well, I learned a lot through that experience. But there's all kinds of factors around you, other staff, facilities. There's just a million other things that you're dealing with. And so it's hard to find. You make a good point. Not every assistant coach is cut out to be a head coach, and not every athlete is cut out to be the team captain. And that's okay. So what's really tough is finding that person who on their own as a student athlete is going to show up and just work hard every day. I mean, Jordan Walker from our basketball team, Jordan Jelly Walker, that guy came every day trying to do what he could do to be the player of the year. Mm-hmm. And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be the player of the year. And he was. And then he wanted to play in the NBA. And he's getting that opportunity right now, you know, with the Mavericks and their G League team. But it's because he works really hard at it. And so that shows leadership, right? And Trey Jemison, who's right now with the Wizards, they picked him up. I don't know if you saw that on a 10-day contract, the mm-hmm. Washington Wizards with the Pelicans G League team. You know, Trey also worked really hard, but Trey also kind of helped control the locker room. Like if somebody got kind of crazy or out of line or just mad or over frustrated, you know, Trey's physical presence, I'm not saying he bullied anybody, but like he could calm people down. And you know, looking at his physical stature, I think he probably was very effective at that. And so you need some of that. And it's just hard to come by. It's rare.
No, his rebounding numbers have been fantastic early in the season, so he certainly deserves that shot at the next level. So we'll talk some classic rock and roll coming up here in just a few minutes. There was something else I wanted to get into, and I totally forgot what it was about because you were really expounding on what we were talking about there, and I thought it was very, very interesting. When you're talking about the leadership, you were talking about the leaderships, and you're talking about some of those skills. And then I think there are some great coaches that are successful that aren't great leaders. And I think there are some guys that aren't great leaders that are end up being decent coaches. And I'm not saying Jim Harbaugh is one of those guys because obviously he has been successful everywhere he's gone. We saw him go to back-to-back-to-back NFC Championship games with San Francisco, so he smelled it. He's right. What's that?
3 out of 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? And so he splits, which was, okay, kind of strange. Not to say that, he was hanging it up. I mean, and then, of course, he goes to Michigan, and he ends up winning a national championship. And, it's hard to believe he was there for 9 years. Had he not brought home that national championship and then all of a sudden took that San Diego job, I wonder what Michigan fans would have felt like. But because he brought them home the gold, I feel like they were more like, okay, we're good. Can you just talk a little bit about your thoughts on Jim Harbaugh going back to pros and how that went down? That was it's just kind of a bizarre situation because you just won't see it very often in sports.
Yeah, I've never met Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, I can talk a little bit about it only because just like any fan would, I guess. Sometimes people need change. Sometimes people need change. They need a new challenge. I don't think I would have guessed that he'd been at Michigan 9 years. Wow, I can't believe it was 9 years. I would have never, if you'd asked me that, I don't know what I would have said, but I don't think it would have been that many. And so that's in the modern era. That's kind of a long time to be mm-hmm. at one place. Maybe he missed the pros. We talked about this, I think, maybe last week. The NFL is a harder job in terms of the sport, the X's and O's outsmarting your opponent because all the coaches are so smart and they have so many people analyzing and overanalyzing and, dissecting your tendencies and all that stuff. And they all have PhDs in football. So that part's harder, but you've got somebody else. You have a whole team of people out there scouting and looking for talent so that you don't have to. Now you may, as the coach, watch them a little bit, but you're not having to recruit the way in college you have to recruit. I think the pro jobs in a lot of ways are a lot easier overall because you don't have to worry about academics or compliance, and you don't have to worry about, you're not going to coaches meetings, you're not going out on campus to meet with student groups, you don't have donors calling you, or you're not going to ask for money, and they don't have to do any of that stuff. Yeah. And they don't do a ton of media. They do press obligations, before and after games, or kind of in and around the games. There's probably an obligation before and after practice, but they're not. Our coaches are out trying to go to every Rotary Club, Kiwanis Club, anybody that'll have them to try to spread the word to get people excited about the Blazers and want to come to a game. The NFL coaches or NBA coach, they don't have to do that. I'm not saying they don't do it,
yeah,
but they don't. They don't. It's a different motivation. They may choose to do it because they enjoy it, but they don't have to. Like, oh man, if I could just get somebody to come to the Chargers game this week, oh man, maybe I can get this group to come. Let's go speak to this group. They're it's just totally different. And so, again, I don't know, Jim. He won the national championship. What else can you do? Win another one, I guess. He never won the Super Bowl, or did he win the Super Bowl?
No, he didn't. I mean, that's the reason why a lot of people are saying he's going back, because that's the one thing he hasn't done.
Yeah, let's go do that. I mean, but he was really successful at San Diego. He was really successful at Stanford, which people kind of, for some reason, forget that one. And really successful with the 49ers. He's clearly been very successful with Michigan. Again, maybe the guy just wants a new challenge. There's been a lot of, he's been through a lot of NCAA investigation stuff. I'm not saying he did or didn't do anything right or wrong. I don't know.
I just wonder how his character will. And obviously he's done it before, but again, it was 10 years ago. Maybe he's changed. We all change over 10 years. I'm just wondering how that cutesy quirky weirdness that he brings with him everywhere he goes. And certainly it was a love fest. I mean, I've never seen a coach hug and love and kiss on his players like I saw him do. Not after the national championship, during it, during the run, I thought was fantastic. And then I'm thinking to myself, is this going to work with guys who are making $30 million a year? Well, it's working for the Miami coach. It worked at the New England coach for a long period of time.
He did it already. I mean, he was with San Francisco. You can't, I mean, a guy goes to the Super Bowl or he goes to the NFC Championship 3 out of 4 years. You can't say he wasn't successful, right?
Yeah.
I was just going to say that Jim, look, come back to the NCAA stuff. I don't know what he did or didn't do, but he may have also just been sort of exhausted by that as well. And just like, man, you know what? I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to move on. I mean, it could be any number of things that made him want to go, but I'm sure he'll do well with the Chargers. He's done well everywhere else.
What are your thoughts on Bill Belichick? I see this and I'm just kind of like, just go away. I mean, I don't want to see him go out. The fact that he has to go to the Atlanta Falcons for a second interview, just is a head scratcher to me. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm like, he's the greatest coach, certainly numbers wise, that we've ever seen. I'm not saying he's the greatest coach we've ever had. I'm just saying numbers wise, you can make an argument he's certainly the GOAT. And he's having to go back to the Atlanta Falcons for a second interview. I mean, it's almost like, what the hell is going on here? What's your thoughts on that? And
talking to one of our coaches about this a couple of days ago, they said, they were like, why would he have to do that? I mean, I'm guessing, Tony, it's not about football. It's not about coaching. It's probably more of a negotiation conversation like, okay, Bill, what do you need to be successful? What's the recipe for success? What are, you know, during your prime with New England and you had it so good, other than you had Tom Brady, which is probably part of the conversation. I had Tom Brady, so we got to have the best quarterback we can get. But, you know, like a management structure, staff structure, organizational structure, who's reporting to who, what makes this the best? That's my guess, is that it's less of an interview as much as figuring that out. And then also somewhat compatibility. I mean, Tony, I can just tell you, man, if you hire somebody that you can't get along with, or worse, can't get along with anybody else, now everybody else is miserable. Now you're losing other valuable staff who are just like, I'm not working with that person, him or her. So now you just lost an operations person or a marketing person or an administrative assistant. It could be any number of people that you really work well with and like, and has otherwise been really successful and positive to your organization. But now they report to this coach or supervisor that they can't stand, because as knowledgeable as that supervisor may be, if they're difficult to be around and everybody else is miserable, you're just not going to be successful, right? So I'm guessing there's also some sort of compatibility kind of gauging, you know, that both the owner and he are doing with one another both ways.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than an old coach that just doesn't know when to hang it up. And I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. But then I see like a Mac Brown, who quite frankly, when he got back in college football, is like, don't get back into football. Don't. And he's made it successfully. He's done a fantastic job. I mean, he really has. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
They're better than they were. They are better now than they have been since he left.
Yeah. 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 So that's good stuff. All right. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Tabitha down in Southside. I had a question here for you, and I was going through these, and pardon me for looking off camera a little bit while you were giving us one of your fantastic answers. She wants to know, please ask Mark what his favorite band self-titled song is. The Monkees. They sang a song called The Monkees because of the Monkees. Night Ranger. I know, right? They had a song called Night Ranger. Can you think of while we were doing this, because I wanted to make sure I knew what I was talking about, I actually wrote down some of these bands that actually have self-titled songs named after their band.
I'm gonna have to come back to Tamitha on that one. I gotta think about, like, I gotta just create a list of the songs, period.
Yeah.
Much what my favorite would be.
Bad Company. Bad Company.
Yeah. Uh-huh, that's a good one.
Did you know that
you wrote some?
Yeah, I did. I'll give them to you. Blue Oyster Cult had a song called Blue Oyster Cult, which I was not aware of. Black Sabbath. Yep. Black Sabbath obviously had a song called Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Chicago. Had a song called Chicago. Earth, Wind, and Fire had a song called Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I didn't know that.
Did you know that Fleetwood Mac had a self-titled song? I was not aware of that. Iron Maiden. No, I was aware of that. I remember that. Iron Maiden had their own self-titled song.
That one's got to be great.
It really does. Kool and the Gang. Oh, was in here. Motorhead.
What'd you have to do? You Google this? You had to Google this.
No, I went to our website, TonyCurryRadio.net, and I go to ultimateclassicrock.com, which is a great site, and they've got an article that just popped up yesterday about 28 bands that recorded self-titled songs.
Wow.
There's not a whole lot on Bad Company. Bad Company is certainly one of my favorites. And I do remember the song Night Ranger from Night Ranger, which I think is super, super cool. You got to have some cojones to sing a self-titled song about your band because you're not changing your title anytime soon.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a great question, Tam. So I'm going to come back to you on that one.
Okay. Get after it. All right. Make sure you get those tickets. Big ball game. We're running out of time. Memphis going on this Sunday, 4:00. Quickly talk about that. I know we're going to sell that bad boy out. I'm going to be down there. I cannot wait for that basketball game. It's going to be huge.
Yep. If you don't have tickets, you better get them today. Mm-hmm. You need to get them now. We are selling tickets fast. It's going to be a huge crowd. It will be the biggest crowd of the year to this point. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we're on national television. We want to make a great showing. We want to help our team win. And by the way, women's basketball, who plays tonight at Wichita State, is playing great basketball too. So cheering for them too. And they've got a great homestead coming up next week, but, the next one at home, Memphis, 4:00, they're currently ranked, as you said, I think maybe 10th or close to 10th.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And, you know, this is an old rivalry that we've rekindled with our relationship with the American Athletic Conference. We're going to have the Bartow family here. It's the Bartow Classic. So we give there's a dollar from every single ticket sold goes to the Gene Bartow Cancer Fund over at UAB Hospital. So it's for a great cause and also a great opportunity to support our team. And, you know, this is why we joined the American. I mean, this rivalry, probably as much as anything, was about getting this back together and so that our fans said that they wanted. And so now's our opportunity to prove that. And listen, our basketball team has been a little bit up and down, but they're very athletic and they're very competitive. And, you know, we lost a heartbreaker at Charlotte the other night, but what a heck of a game. It was a great game. Mm-hmm. And a close, it was right down to the wire. It was a 3-point game with 30 seconds to go. We lost by 6, and might have been 20 seconds to go. It was a 3-point game. And so, you know, and they're number one. Right now, Charlotte's number one in the league, even though Memphis is ranked higher nationally. So we've got the ability to beat Memphis, but we need our crowd to help that go. So hope we'll see you at 4:00 on Sunday.
We'll see you down there. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. Have a great week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.